Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Joan, happy Lent.
Well, happy Lent. It began this week, of course, and I just keep wondering, every time I come to the studio to do this show, it seems like we had just done it like 5 hours ago and a whole week has passed. There's two interesting things to talk about this week. One, of course, is the traditional beginning of Lent at the Station Church, and then the Feast of the Chair of St. Peter. And just to briefly mention that, and we'll go back to Lent, this is on February 22nd. And it is one of two times a year when the statue of St. Peter, probably all of our listeners who've been to the Basilica have seen the statue of St. Peter, down the main aisle on your right, almost as you approach the main altar. And so we have St. Peter seated with his right hand extended. And this is one of 2 days a year that St. Peter is vested. He has the triple tiara crown on, he has vestments, he has a ring on one of the fingers of his extended hand, and there are very beautiful, almost always, I believe, red roses, 3, 4, 5 dozen red roses in a huge bouquet on the floor in front of the pillar where the statue is.
And it looks absolutely beautiful.
Oh, it's magnificent. And then they do have the little rope barriers put up, so that is one of 2 days you see this. The saint dressed like this. However, it is also one of 2 days you cannot go up, as people like traditionally do, and kiss or touch his foot, which is practically worn away after centuries of people doing that. Now, the other day of the year in which the statue of St. Peter is vested is June 29th, which, of course, is the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul Apostles. But the spectacular thing in the Basilica about the February 22nd celebration of the Chair of Peter, which is embedded in I don't even know what to call it. You can't call
capsule
it a frame.
Capsule is the best I can think of.
It's embedded in capsule. This huge sculpture,
yes.
Created by Bernini. And this was a chair that was said to have been used, or anyway, parts of the remnants of it were said to have been used by St. Peter. So this is indicative. The Chair of Peter, the Pope, the papacy, the voice of authority, the voice of the magisterium of the Church is
and
the importance of that.
And also, with the actual chair in the sculpture, there's a beautiful piece of symbolism, because that's immediately below that magnificent alabaster window of the Holy Spirit.
Of the Holy Spirit, right.
So you've got the Holy Spirit coming down upon Peter.
It's really beautiful, and of course, just feet away from the papal altar. And
which is a mass of flowers and lights.
Exactly. And then, of course, the papal altar is right over the place where St. Peter is buried, if you go down to the Scavi levels. But the other thing that they do have on the Feast of St. Peter are the myriad lights, candles, on the altar that we were just talking about, the altar where above which you have the Chair of Peter. And they don't have that on the 29th, so this is the only day of the year you're going to see that massive number of candles. So it's very, very lovely. And so the Pope had a busy day on Ash Wednesday with the audience, in which he spoke, of course, at length about Lent, about the meaning of Lent. And then in the afternoon, the procession from the Benedictine San Anselmo to the Church of Santa Sabina, where for quite some time right now the Dominicans have been. The Master General of the Dominican Order lives there, and you could see all the Benedictines, the Dominicans, all in the procession from one basilica to the other, where again there was Mass. Mm-hmm. The Holy Father not only received the ashes, but he gave ashes, imposed ashes as well on cardinals and on the faithful. It's a very small church. It can't hold many people. So you can watch it.
It's very intimate.
It's very, very intimate, which is very lovely. Anything that regards the Pope that's very intimate is so rare that it's a very special moment if you can attend it and certainly be inside. Even if you were outside during the parade route and it was alternately drizzling and not. But even if you can be outside, it's very, very special to be part of this solemn procession. And they do have screens. They have big screens where people can follow what's going on inside
of
the church. So it's lovely.
One of the beauties of the Church of Santa Sabina, apart from its age and the fact that it's built on the area that was the home of Sabina. Saint Sabina herself. It was actually a Roman temple.
Wouldn't be the first temple that has become, over time, became a Christian church. So then that was the first of the station masses, which throughout Lent, every day, I don't have the list with me today, I'm sorry I didn't think of it, but every day of Lent, a different church in Rome is the station church. It's always the same church. So it's Santa Sabina on the Wednesday, it is San Giorgio Velabro on the Thursday after Ash Wednesday, and so forth. And the masses are said at 7 in the morning in English. You get quite a wide variety of people attending from the English community. That is to say, students, religious, priests, the seminarians from the North American College. They've been doing this since, I think, 1960.
That became Beda a tradition. And the Beda as well, because when the station church is in Paul's Outside the Walls, everybody comes across to our place, to the Beda, for breakfast afterwards.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
Yes.
I think I'll invite a few friends over the day it's at St. Peter's. Because I can just hop across the street and put some muffins in the oven or something like that. But the station masses actually go back to like the 4th, the station churches go back to like the 4th century when the Pope would go out into the city of Rome on special feast days, and then it became limited to the days of Lent. And this went on for quite a number of centuries. It fell into disuse, certainly during the period when the popes were in Avignon. It was revived, and I think John the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, of course, gave great importance to it. That was in 1959 that he started reviving that custom. And then I do know, because of my links with the North American, that they did start this. As a matter of fact, they have on their website, the Pontifical North American College, which is pnac.org, they have an interactive visit. Go to the Lenten Station Churches, which you'll see right away on their homepage. Click on that, and it's an interactive map. They have an aerial map of Rome and little numbers next to all the station churches. So one, of course, was Santa Sabina, two was San Giorgio. When you click on the number of that church, you want to know where to go tomorrow. You click, and you know it's church 3. You click on that, and you have the whole history of the church. And some of them have pictures, not all. And you have the whole history of the church and even how to get there, what buses or trams or what transportation you would need to get there. It's a really wonderful site, and it's very interesting for people who do live here. Well, to try and do it is a real trial of love, to be up that early in the morning to actually get to a place to 4 or 7 o'clock Mass. And, you know, you'll have attending the Mass, you'll have lots of ambassadors, too.
Definitely.
And not just English native language, but ambassadors from other countries whose second or third language might be English. And, you know, if you really want to make some kind of a sacrifice during Lent, that is a way to do it.
And two other beautiful things about the station churches. One is that after the Mass, in these very old churches, sometimes they open up parts of the church that aren't normally open to the public because they're so old and so precious.
Or relics, especially
relics
that
yes.
will be brought out for the day of a certain saint.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, you mentioned San Giorgio in Velabro. That is a very old church that's just on the edge of the Forum. And in the early days of the church, it was customary for people to take pillars from pagan temples to build the church. And I was in San Giorgio one Saturday afternoon, actually, and I was distracted whilst I was praying because there are actually 8 completely different types of pillars from
exactly.
all over the place.
Exactly. And it's a very, you feel the oldness of that church.
Oh, yes.
It's one of the ones that you don't have to be told it dates from very early centuries. You just feel it
you
and
know
see
it
when you go in. You really do. And it hasn't been embellished that much over the years.
It's very plain.
Exactly. It is not lavish marble and bronze and whatever strikes your fancy. It's actually, yes, very, very plain.
Mm. Well, actually, when I went into San Giorgio, I had an unexpected treat. Because I just went in to pray. And I didn't know that there was going to be a wedding shortly afterwards. And a violinist and a soprano were there practicing. And they were playing, singing the Ave Verum and the Ave Maria. And in that ancient church, it was beautiful.
What a gift. Whenever you go into a church that an organist or a choir or something is practicing and you don't expect it, it really, really is a gift. So, no, it's been a wonderful week of tradition, of custom, of going back to our roots, the church's roots for many, many centuries ago. And I know that we're close to the end of our time, but there's a lot of news associated with the Holy Father this week. He wrote a letter to the Archbishop of Warsaw, who, of course, had resigned on the very same day that he was to have taken office, because he had said that he had been involved with the Polish authorities, had collaborated with Polish authorities, not to the extent of ruining anybody's life or reputation, but anyway, in this era of communists, and offered his resignation. The Pope accepted it, and the Pope wrote a very wonderful, moving letter to Archbishop of Wielgus. And he expressed his closeness to him, his spiritual closeness. He blessed him, and he said he expressed his fraternal understanding, and he actually urged the Archbishop to return to his ministry so that the people can benefit from his vast and profound knowledge and priestly piety. So that was a very moving letter. And then another piece of news, which I think is very exciting, involving the Holy Father. Cardinal Paul Poupard was in Cairo, or he still could be, I think, as we're speaking. And he met the Grand Imam of Al-Khazar, which is the name given to a mosque, and it is also the name of the, I believe, second oldest university in the world. So Cardinal Poupard, who is head of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue and also the Council for Culture, was in Cairo. And when he met with the Grand Imam, he extended an invitation to visit Rome, an invitation on behalf of Pope Benedict, and the Imam has accepted the invitation. So,
which is wonderful.
It should be very, very exciting. I think since the Regensburg speech, things have taken such a different direction from the anger that was born on the part of Muslims who did not understand where the Holy Father was coming from in the Regensburg speech, to his visit, which really turned things around, his visit to Turkey in November and early December, to now this invitation. We've got a lot to look forward to.
And see you next week.
You've been listening to Joan Lewis. To find out more about Joan or to ask her a question, please visit our website at vaticanradio.org.